Beery Landscaping v. Costigan. Mr. McNeil.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Don McNeil and I represent the landscape construction contractors who are the plaintiffs' appellants in this case, which is a lawsuit seeking injunctive and declaratory relief against Illinois Department of Labor Joe Costigan, whose enforcement of the Illinois Prevailing Wage Act violates the Due Process Clause of the 14th Amendment because it unconstitutionally delegates to the unions and employers who negotiate collective bargaining.
I don't understand that delegation business. Where is that? What does that have to do with due process?
It has to do with a line of cases starting with Yikwu versus Hopkins, which was decided over 100 years ago, that say that the state cannot delegate or defer to the judgment of.
Where is that in the Constitution?
In the Due Process Clause.
Where? There's nothing in the Due Process Clause about delegation.
Well, in reading the cases, it seems to be a mixture of concepts of due process and concepts of equal protection.
Well, I don't get either of them.
Well, what you're doing...
We have all these military contractors in Iraq and Afghanistan, right? And they carry out military duties, they wear uniforms, they shoot people and so on. But they're not employees of the United States. They're contractors. So
contractors.
We've delegated a portion of our, you know, defense activities to these private contractors. We have private prisons, right? Delegating imprisonment to private firms.
None of those independent
contractors.
None of those contractors is empowered by the federal government in those cases to decide issues.
Empowered. They're empowered to kill people and empowered to lock people up.
But they're not empowered.
That sounds like a significant governmental power exercised by private people.
But, Your Honor, they're not empowered to exercise their right to deprive other citizens of their property interests without any sort of guidelines or structure.
Depriving people of their liberty and so on, that's
only as agents of the government.
Pardon?
Only as agents of the government. What you have in the improper delegation cases is almost the reverse. You have the government saying, you make the decision, and that decision is going to affect other entities with a similar property interest, including, as in this case, your competitors.
They're not delegating decision. They're delegating. they're relying on private information rather than on their own information.
But rather than ascertaining the prevailing wage, which is their duty under the statute.
Is the government constantly basing decisions on information that it gets from outside?
It isn't a matter of getting the information from outside.
Lobbyists furnish information to Congress. Lobbyists know more than the congressmen and give them the information, and that leads to legislation. Is that improper delegation?
Well, but a lobbyist doesn't have the power in lobbying in favor or against a bill.
Well, the unions don't have the power. All they do is furnish the information. The government apparently is too lazy to do its own information surveillance.
But they don't furnish.
The resources, or it probably, it just believes that since the prevailing wage statute is limited to public works, it just knows, as a matter of fact, that the unions provide the labor for public works in Illinois, and so whatever they charge is the prevailing wage. Maybe a little sloppy, but doesn't government often operate in that fashion?
But in this case, it is not true that the unions that have been recognized as determining the prevailing wage rates represent a majority of the employees who work in these classifications. What you have here...
Well, what's the evidence on that? Now, we're talking about just public works in Illinois. So how many of the public workers are represented by unions.
In any particular classification, it will vary based upon geography and based upon the classification at issue.
Wait, I've lost you. So we're talking about these landscape workers.
Right.
Now, what percentage of landscape workers on public projects in Illinois are represented by unions?
In the eight counties at issue here, there's never been over the last several years since this lawsuit was filed more than a handful of contractors whose employees are represented by the laborers union, yet the Department of Labor accepts...
I'm talking only about public works.
Yes. There are only a handful of landscape construction contractors. It's never been more than five that are represented by the laborers union, which is the union that sets the rates that the Department of Labor accepts. There are over 100...
You're saying that the... this prevailing wage is based on public works that of just some small handful of contracts. Is that what you're saying?
What I'm saying is that in the landscape
industry...
Is that what
the record shows?
The record shows that there are fewer than five employers that have collective bargaining relationships with the laborers union, even though the laborers union is the union whose rates are accepted by the Department of Labor. And there are by now over 100 that are represented by Local 150 of the operating engineers. And Judge Zagel, in his opinion, gave an example of the effect of that situation when he said, to take just one example, on federal and private landscaping projects undertaken in Cook County, the going rate for a landscape helper in June 2010 was $11.50 per hour in total compensation. The same person working a state-funded project would receive a total hourly compensation package of $52.70. That is 458% of the comparable federal or private rate.
This footnote does not provide information on how many of the landscape workers on public works are being paid.
No, but that information is in the record. And is summarized in our initial brief and to a certain extent in our reply brief.
Mm-hmm.
It's undisputed that that's the situation. With regard to the equipment operator classification, even though the right union is involved, in the case of the landscape equipment operator classification, only the state pays the highest rate. If the job involves federal money, or is a private job, then the federal or private rates are actually about one half of the rate.
But that's irrelevant, isn't it?
No, it demonstrates exactly why.
And Illinois have a law which says these people have to be paid what other workers in public projects are paid. Can it say that?
Could it have a law? Yes, it could.
That's
it could
it
have a law
says.
That says that
it says public works.
Well, it could have a law that says that the rate, the federal rate, for example, and the state rate should be the same, but it doesn't have such a law. That's why on a federal project, if this building were being renovated or landscaping was being done, there isn't much room for landscaping on this block. But if that were the case, the contractor involved would have to pay $11.50 to a landscape helper.
Well, are you saying that the city is violating? that the state is violating its own statute?
Oh, for sure.
Well, what does that have to do with federal?
It's not a cause of action we can bring in the federal court.
It's its own statute. Sue under statute.
We have.
Well, what do we have to drag in delegation for?
Well, because what happens in the current scheme is that the prevailing wage rates are being set prospectively. The statute anticipates that once a year there'll be a survey to see what the rate should be. Instead, what happens is the Department of Labor gets a collective bargaining agreement, let's say in the middle of April. It's effective on June 1st. It makes sure that the agreement is signed. And then it publishes in the middle of May the rate to begin June 1st at a time when it can't possibly be prevailing because it hasn't been paid to anybody. So,
Mr. McNeil, are you pursuing only a substantive due process claim, or is your improper delegation claim a standalone claim?
The improper delegation claim is more akin to a substantive due process claim than a procedural due process claim, but I think it's a separate animal. especially important because when the improper delegation occurs, the constitutional violation is complete, as opposed to a Parrott v. Taylor situation, where what we're looking at, what the court's looking at, is a the adequacy of a state remedy. I'd like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. McNeil. Mr. Ellis?
Yes, Your Honor. Good morning, counsel. May it please the court, I'm Assistant Attorney General Carl Elitz for Joe Costigan, the Director of the Illinois Department of Labor. Judge Posner, to answer your question about contract work in Illinois, I believe if you look to an Illinois State Appellate Court decision from 1997, Illinois Landscape Contractors Association, there's a discussion in that case about how the department looks to union agreements in setting prevailing wage rates. In that case, there's a discussion about the laborers' union that my opponent mentioned. It says that there is 2,000 signatures to that agreement, the laborers' union's agreement, and that it is common in Illinois for construction workers to do landscape work. Under the Illinois statute, landscape work done by anyone is paid at the landscape prevailing wage rates. And so the department has taken the position that that is the contract which establishes as a matter of evidence what the prevailing wage rate is for landscape-type work. The agreement that my opponent thinks the department should give credence to was also discussed in that decision. That's called the Landscape Contractors Act, and the case discusses that and says that 80 signatories have signed that agreement. So although there are, that's an agreement of landscape workers, it's a finding of the Illinois Department that landscape work can be done by any laborer, and in fact, that's the basis of the department's holding that landscape workers should be paid at the laborer's rate, because those who swing pickaxes should be compensated in the same way that those who swing hammers. It's a policy decision that was made by the department in looking at the character of the work done. And that's why we have such large disparities between people who believe that landscapers should be paid one rate and the department's view, which is that the nature of the work should set the standard. And the standard, the pay rate for laborers in Illinois is very high. So that's why we have the disparity that he complains of.
And what exactly is the procedure they should have followed under state law if they wanted to challenge your use of this laborer's contract as the guide to the prevailing wage?
Your Honor, they could make any claim they like in the department in a Section 9 hearing, including constitutional claims. After the department makes a ruling, then they have administrative review options, which is essentially an appeal to the circuit court in the county where they are doing business.
What your opponents argue in their brief is that as soon as the state designates a prevailing wage, most of the contractors will immediately comply with that, and that then will be the prevailing wage. And then they'll never be able to get relief.
That's not something that is correct, Your Honor. If they do not believe a prevailing wage is properly set because it's improperly delegated, because it's collusive, whatever, they can bring that to the attention of the department within 30 days after the department posts that decision on its website. Then, after the director certifies that the prevailing wages are properly set, once a year in June, they can seek review of that decision in the Illinois Circuit Courts, and they would get the same relief that they're asking in this 1983 action, which is they would get the relief they want, which is that the prevailing wage would be declared not prevailing as defined by the department, and the courts in Illinois would then set the prevailing wage. The statute provides for that. To the extent that the department has erred in setting the prevailing wage, the Illinois courts can set it.
Counsel, under a Section 9 judicial review, what exactly would an Illinois court be allowed to consider when reviewing the prevailing wage rate determination if they can't consider evidence of wages paid below the prevailing rate?
Well,
Isn't the outcome already preordained?
No, Your Honors. I don't think the outcome is preordained. The Illinois statute provides that the prevailing wage, if it is unchallenged, is final. But if it is challenged, then obviously it's not final. And that question as to whether the prevailing wage has been properly set can be raised in the circuit court, and then there would be full judicial review of that question, including all the questions here. And this matters because, in answer of your earlier question, Your Honor, you asked about whether they were bringing just a substantive due process claim. That's what I read their reply brief to say. And under this court's precedent in Lee versus City of Chicago, one of the questions that's asked is whether the state provides adequate process as a precondition for deciding that there's been a substantive due process violation. So we do get back into the procedural due process questions, even if they limit their argument to substantive questions. But as I'm arguing, the Illinois system, where they can bring all their claims to the circuit court under administrative review law, gives them that opportunity. So there can't be a substantive due process violation. They're critical of the way the department has established the Prevailing Wage Act through the dominant CBAs. The department conducted, as the record shows, a 1994 survey every county in the state. In 2000, they surveyed six of the major counties around Cook County and found that this was the proper way of setting the prevailing wage. As Your Honor, Judge Posner had asked about delegation, there's nothing delegated here. What's going on is that the department is using the collective bargaining agreements to establish the prevailing wage. And as I mentioned earlier, there's two Illinois cases, an Illinois Supreme Court case called Hand from 1994 and the previously mentioned appellate court, Illinois Landscape Contractors Association from 1997. That explains all this so-called delegation. If there are no other questions, I'd like to stand on my brief.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Ellis. Mr. McNeil, how much time does he have? 1 minute? Let me ask you a question. Suppose that this state conducted a survey of all landscape workers in the state and averaged their wage together and said that that shall be the wage paid people, you know, workers on state projects. Would that satisfy you?
It's essentially what the statute requires. And it's a requirement that the state has ignored now.
But that would still be delegation, right? They would be basing what they pay workers on public works, on state works, private contractors pay and what unions, you know, extort from private contractors. Why isn't that delegation?
I think improper delegation is the jargon that's been applied. I think improper deferral might be a little bit more accurate in cases like this.
I don't understand you. Your argument is all about delegation. Why isn't my example an example of delegation? They look at union negotiated wages and non-union negotiated wages, and they average it all together, and they say this shall be the wage, right? So they're delegating to unions and private employers the decision on how much to pay in government money for these state landscaping. Now, why isn't that delegation?
Because what the state is doing in that situation is exactly what the statute requires. Looking back,
the statute may require it, but you say that you say there's this constitutional delegation doctrine, not allowed to delegate state decisions to private people like unions. But if they do that in a comprehensive way, statistically valid way, then you're fine with it. But why isn't that delegation?
Because what you're talking about there is a process of investigation to determine what the actual prevailing wage is. What happens now instead of that is that the wage is actually set...
All right, you don't like the process of investigation. You think it's inadequate. What does that have to do with delegation? It seems to me in both cases, the wage is determined by private contracts.
I don't think the process of investigation, there's anything wrong with it, except that it doesn't exist. They don't do that. Now, your hypothetical is, well, suppose they did it. If they did it, they'd be in compliance.
Beautiful investigation... They're still going to be basing the wage on private contracts, just more private contracts or different private contracts. Why isn't that still delegation?
It might be characterized as delegation, but to me it seems that the
What do you mean it might be characterized as delegation?
I think it's investigation. I don't think it's giving the right to set the rate to the individuals who are doing the survey.
They're not giving the right to set the rates. All they're doing is, instead of looking at all the union contracts, they're looking at one union contract.
Well, what they're doing...
Any difference? Why is that Why is it delegation when they look at one, but not when they look at 10?
Because in the example, the hypothetical example you're giving, it is the Department of Labor ascertaining the rate. In reality, what happens today is that if a union is with...
What's the difference whether they look at one union or 10 unions?
It isn't the number of unions. It's the process. What they do now...
Well, your only complaint is that they're not looking at enough wage setters.
No, our complaint now is that the wage setter is not just the labor union, but the labor union and the employers that negotiate with it, and that raises exactly the concerns of all the cases.
Nothing to do with delegation.
Line.
No, nothing to do with delegation. You have anything further you want to say?
No, Your Honor, except that we'd ask you to reverse, remand, transfer summary judgment on behalf of plaintiffs.
Okay,
thank
well,
you.
We thank you, Mr. McNeil and Mr. Ellis.